best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I need fun.
I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt, and this is a Studio 2 Extra. Our guest this episode is a social media sensation, kind of. Local guy Mark Zandi is the chief economist of Moody's Analytics, and he's been a numbers guy for decades. His recent post on X was liked and retweeted by thousands of users, reaching over 3 million people so far. And his big, controversial statement, "The economy is good." At one point in his post, he says, quote, "This is among the best performing economies in my 35 plus years as an economist. The avalanche that ensued was so crazy that we just had to sit down with him and get an explanation."
Could I say it went viral?
Yeah, it definitely went viral.
Okay.
Why do you think it went viral?
I think people are looking for good news. I think people are kind of down, pessimistic. There's a lot going on in the world that, you know, is pretty scary to watch. I think people are just, give me some good news, please. And I gave them some good news, and I think they ran with it.
So the rest of the tweet is you making the case for why the economy is good.
Yeah.
Let's make the case here. Why is this a good economy?
Well, I'll do that. Yeah. Let me preface it by saying, you know, the economy is this massive elephant, right? And depending on which part of the elephant you're touching, and everyone's touching a different part of the elephant, you get a different kind of perspective on things. But, you know, I'm an economist. I look at the elephant from afar.
Macro.
Macro, 30,000 foot level. And when I look down, I see a very, very healthy elephant. Economists like the GDP, gross domestic product, that's the value of all the things that we produce. That's growing 3%. That's after inflation. You know, just for context, 2% is really good. So 3% is like fantastic.
It's 50% better than really good.
And we're not doing that with inflation. Inflation's been coming in. I know people are still, and I think this goes to where there might be a disconnect between economists and the average American. They're still feeling the sting of the inflation of a couple, 3 years ago. But inflation today, over the past year, really nothing to be nervous about or worried about. Very consistent with what the Federal Reserve would like to see. Lots of jobs across lots of industries, especially here in Philadelphia, healthcare and financial services and construction. You know, low unemployment, 4.1% unemployment. That's about as low as it gets. That's consistent with what economists call full employment. Across every demographic, age, ethnicity, gender, educational attainment, it's very, very low. Every region of the country, here in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, across the country, you know, unemployment is universally low. Stock market feels like it's hitting a record high. Now, of course, only 50% of Americans own stocks and probably only a third own any stocks of any consequence. So it doesn't benefit the American people broadly, but, you know, that's a good barometer of the health of the economy. Record highs, you know, day in and day out. Housing values.
Way up.
2/3 of Americans own their own home. I mean, I've lived in Philadelphia, you know, most of my life, and to see house prices move north feels very good. You know, inflation was a problem, and we are still paying a lot more for groceries and for rent particularly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what really has people bugged. But, you know, even there, good news. I mean, as I said, grocery prices haven't really budged in the past year. Some items have, like egg prices are up because of the avian flu, but across all groceries, they're basically flat. And rents haven't gone anywhere for 2 years. I can go on.
The crazy part is it took you a while to get through that whole answer because there are so many good things to say about the economy. But the point that you made and what you posted is that it's better than it's been, right? You've been looking at the economy for a long time, right? There's always going to be something that's not great about any economy, right?
Yeah, but I've been doing this for a long time, 35 years as a professional economist. I'm hard-pressed to find another time where all the numbers are kind of aligned. But inflation now is back to something that the Fed wants, the Federal Reserve wants. I mean, the Federal Reserve is, at the end of the day, the institution whose objective is to maintain stable, low inflation. They define that as 2% year over year. And that's what we're getting, you know, right now. Now, again, if you go back 2-3 years ago, inflation was very high, primarily because the obvious, the pandemic and the impact that had on supply chains and labor markets, and the Russian war in Ukraine causing oil, natural gas prices, food prices, agriculture prices going north. And you know, as those shocks have faded into the background, inflation has come right back in. And by the way, you know, there's been a lot of debate as to why inflation has been such a problem. it's important to note that the inflation problem is universal across the globe. It's not just a U.S. issue. It's a global issue. And therefore, it strongly suggests it's due to things like the pandemic and the Russian war.
Speaking of across the globe, the thing that really shocked me is that American economic growth is so far out ahead of the other developed countries. That, to me, seems like maybe the most unusual thing about what's happening right now.
Yeah, great point. I mean, if you go back to the financial crisis almost a generation ago, or even in the teeth of the pandemic shutdowns, you know, back in 2020, it was the Chinese economy that was kind of leading the way. It was the strongest economy on the planet, kind of powering, you know, any recovery. Not so now. It's really the U.S. economy. It's the American consumer, you know, you and I as purchasers of things, because we're buying, you know, everything we produce, and then we're buying a lot of what the rest of the world is producing. And so we're driving the train. So for the first time in a long time, you know, perhaps 20, 25 years, it's the American economy that's leading the way.
And perhaps 20, 25 years.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that seems like this was the goal all along, that we've been despairing about America falling behind. At least that's what a lot of political discourse was. Now, we're steaming out in front. I mean, it feels like we should be jumping up and down, Mark Zandi.
Yeah, I'm jumping up and down. but again, there is this disconnect. And I do think, you know, people still feel that sting. You know, I talked to a lot of folks and try to understand what's going on in their financial lives. And you talk to people and you go, well, how are you feeling about things from their financial perspective? Yeah. And they say, well, not so good. And you go, why? It almost always turns out to be some food item that people buy on a regular basis that they're paying a lot more for today than 3 years ago. So Wharton student, you know, teaching class at Wharton, mm-hmm. He was angry about the price of ramen noodles. Or my niece, who's a social worker here in Philadelphia, I'm going to mispronounce this. I think I'm going to get it right. Kombucha tea.
Kombucha
tea. I don't know what that is, but she drinks kombucha tea.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Is it good?
Yeah.
I should give it a shot. Baby formula, pound of sugar. So everyone's got something that they buy. And, you know, even though the price of that has not been rising over the past year, year and a half, it's up a lot, 20, 25%, let's say, from where it was 3 years ago. And people are really having a hard time getting beyond that. I think the other thing
is, we've had inflation before, and I get that there was some hyperinflation for a bit, but there have been inflationary periods before, and maybe people had the same reaction. I don't know. But I guess what you're suggesting is that the way people process inflation is different than the way they process other economic woes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I absolutely think that's the case. Well, the last time we had inflation of anything close to what we experienced was back in the 70s and 80s.
Sure.
So most Americans have never felt high inflation. So Right. That's one thing.
They're saying, your niece wasn't drinking kombucha back then. She wasn't even alive.
No, yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, I remember those days.
Yeah.
But most Americans don't. You don't. You're too young, Avi. You have no idea.
No.
So this is
I've read the history books.
Yeah, you've read the history books. But you've never felt it. You never felt it firsthand.
That's true.
And the other thing about inflation, I think, is people think it's unfair, right? Because it's, you know, I was paying this price a year ago, and now I'm paying this higher price today. What the heck?
But wages have risen faster than inflation. And don't people feel that extra money in their pocketbook?
I think they will. I think it's a matter of time.
Really?
You know, I think with each passing month, because it's been now a year and a half maybe that wages are up, growth is outpacing inflation, people's real wages are rising. It just takes time, I think, for people to say, oh, okay, what I'm earning on the job is now going further than it was before.
I mentioned earlier that I found America's growth relative to the rest of the world remarkable. Here's another thing I find remarkable. I have read that the economic benefits of the last few years have disproportionately accrued to middle class, working class, lower class people. Is that true?
Well, I think that's a bit of an overstatement.
Okay.
I mean, in terms of wage growth, yes. So if you look at the wage growth of folks in the bottom part of the wage distribution, low wage workers, their pay increases have been stronger than the folks in the top part. So in that sense, yeah, that's right. But, you know, in a broader sense, no. Mm-hmm. I mean, because high-income households, folks in, say, the top third of the income distribution, you know, they're benefiting from the run-up in stock values.
Right.
The folks in the bottom two-thirds are not. They're benefiting from the run-up in housing values, right? If they have any debt at all, it's a mortgage, they locked in a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage when interest rates were back at 2.5% to 3%, their interest payments have not risen at all. you know, they have a cash cushion. They saved during the pandemic because they couldn't spend, sitting in their checking account. So when that inflation came along, they could call upon that cash to help supplement their income. Low-income households, they blew through that excess saving, that extra cash, very rapidly. And then they had to turn to their credit cards and consumer finance loans to supplement their income, which you could do reasonably well when rates were low. But when rates took off, you know, when the Fed tightened interest rates, it becomes prohibitively expensive. The average interest rate on a credit card today, 22%, record high. So if you have a credit card loan and debt, you know, that's pretty tough. So I think it's fair to say, going back to the elephant metaphor, you know, if you're touching the part of the elephant that represents lower income Americans, you know, they're having a much tougher time. Can I just quickly mention one other thing? Going to this kind of, why do people feel very different than the economic data that I'm espousing? I do think our politics play a role in this. I mean, you can look at surveys, consumer surveys of sentiment, how people are feeling. And you can see if you're a Republican in the current environment, you are abjectly pessimistic about everything. You think this economy is as bad as it's been since the teeth of the financial crisis when unemployment was 10% and the economy was falling apart. That can't be true, but that's the way it's perceived. Whereas on the other side, you got Democrats. I don't think they're jumping up and down with joy that the economy, but they're feeling pretty good about things. So, you know, if you're Democrat, you're watching MSNBC. If you're Republican, you're watching Fox, and you can spin anything any way you want. Even the best news or the worst news, you can spin any way you want. And if you're just listening to that media, that's the way you're going to come. And it doesn't really matter what the data say.
Does that worry you as an economist that there can be no baseline good or bad economy anymore, that things can improve for people and they will not feel it?
Yeah, it's frustrating, certainly frustrating. And I think ultimately, if it doesn't right itself, you know, if this goes on for a while, you end up making bad decisions, bad policy. Because, you know, if the economy is good—
But that might not translate to votes anymore.
No,
right?
but if it's good and people don't perceive it as that, then the policies that you've put in place to get to the good economy
are going
to
be reversed.
Yeah. So I think it has real life implications if, you know, the perceptions are not consistent with the reality of what's going on. And I think that's certainly what's going on, the problem that we, you know, face right now.
That seems dire. I mean, when you put it that way, that someone, some politician, could tank the economy. And 40% of the people say it's great, it's never been better.
Right.
And then you just keep going in that direction
right.
until things get really, really dire.
Right, right. So, but, you know, I think we've been put through a lot, you know, the pandemic and what's going on in our politics is in part a reflection of what happened with the pandemic and, you know, a lot of other broader things going on. But I think as we move further and further away from that event, you know, things feel like they're kind of settling in. You know, we're starting to get our groove back, you know, and I think people will start to feel ultimately better about things. I don't think there's any game-changing event here, though. I think it's a process.
It just takes time.
It just takes time.
You have to have some sort of broader stability for us to get back to that baseline understanding of good, bad economy.
But of course, having said all of that, I'm generally an optimist. So we'll have to see how this plays out. There's a lot of things a lot of things in this going on in the script over the next few weeks, a couple months.
I'll get you out of here on this. What was the experience of going viral like for you? Were you shocked that this thing took off?
Well, that's a funny thing. I have this Twitter handle for 10 years, but I never used it until about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I decided to use it because I have a podcast, and I started, you know, putting it up there on that I have this podcast on Twitter. So what I've discovered is I can't figure out what creates such interest and not create. Like, I'll write a tweet that I think, oh, man, this is really interesting.
Yeah.
Crickets,
yeah.
Yes. And then I write this thing, and within 3 minutes, had just written it. It just put it up there. And it went viral. So I'm so confused. You know,
your naivete is actually kind of refreshing.
I can't figure it out. Well, next time I write a tweet that I think might go viral, I'll ask you, do you think this is going to go viral? very curious in your view.
My guest for this Studio 2 Extra was Moody's Analytics Chief Economist Mark Zandi. You can listen to Studio 2 live on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at noon on WHYY. And by the way, since you're already here, make sure to rate and review the podcast. Our show is produced by Paige Marie Bessler, Debbie Builder, and Andreas Copes. Al Banks is our engineer. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, and thanks for joining me.